Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
For Gareth Southgate's job, I would argue that the performance of the World Cup will be massively swayed by what happens this week.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. I'm Dan Bardell. This is the weekend preview. I'm joined as ever by George Ellick, and back with us after he ditched us last week for the Spurs podcast is Tim Spears. Tim, you well?
Yeah, I was just getting in some practice for the main event, Dan.
Yeah, good times. You're back. Don't ditch us again though, Tim. Not very happy with that at all. And it's also a warm welcome back to Bet365, Steve Freeth, technology guru. How are you, Steve?
Frustrated technology-wise, but a pleasure to be back with you guys, and Tim as well, of course, with the Wolves connection from last season. I'm delighted to be working with him.
Good to have you all with us. So it is the international break, and we're going to be looking ahead to some important games for England, Wales and other nations with just 7 weeks to go until the World Cup begins. It feels absolutely ludicrous to be saying that, but that is where we are in the world. We'll also take this moment to have a look at where things stand in the Premier League. We'll look at the Premier League picture. So, England have two big games this weekend with the Nations League fixtures against Italy on Friday night and Germany on Monday. George, let's talk about the Italy game first. What sort of task does this pose for Southgate? Is it a chance to experiment, or does he need to put his full strength team out?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think he can experiment for so many reasons. I mean, England come into this. It's easy to forget just how bad England's form is coming into this game. Four Nations League games so far. Two defeats against Hungary, the 1-0 in Budapest, and then the 4-0 defeat at Wembley. And then two draws, a decent point in Germany, and then a 0-0 draw against an Italy side who are also in terrible form. You know, the two Euros finalists since that game haven't been in very good nick. So not only is there England will get relegated from Group A effectively if they finish bottom of their group in the Nations League, so they need to win at least one game depending on other results. So for that reason, it's massive. I also think for Gareth Southgate's job, I would argue that the performance of the World Cup will be massively swayed by what happens this week. I think if England go and have two poor performances and results against Germany and Italy, I think that pretty changes the needle as to what is acceptable in Qatar. I think that would make a quarter-final exit probably mean the end of Gareth Southgate's reign, whereas a couple of good results here and getting some positivity again will impact that. And then you have to factor in, this is a pretty rare occasion where England get to play competitive matches against two genuine rivals in terms of the quality of opposition they've got. Normally we see teams going to major tournaments playing for friendlies against sides who probably aren't at the requisite quality to really trouble them too much. So I think for plenty of reasons, this is much more significant than we're used to. You know, of course, Italy aren't going to be in Qatar themselves, but purely in terms of quality of team. And for what it means for Gareth Southgate, he would be mad to use this as too much of an experiment. And I also think because of his nature, when you look at the squad that we're going to talk about fairly soon, given he's been pretty unwilling to experiment with the squad, I think anticipating that he's going to throw caution to the wind for these two games, yeah, there's no chance. That they're kind of must wins, I'd say.
Yeah, and one of the new faces in the squad, Steve, the big news from the England squad that was announced last week is Ivan Toney's first call-up. He's 11-8 to make the squad for Qatar. Do we think he'll get the nod overall over Tammy Abraham and Ollie Watkins, Steve?
Personally not. No, I think Tammy Abraham is ahead of him. He certainly is in the odds anyway. 17 goals last season. I think he's got a couple this season as well, Dan. And listen, you know, well done to those customers who took the 14-1 about Ivan Toney being in the World Cup squad. You might have a bit of value there, but no, I think he's behind. And likewise, I'd be interested in your opinions, Dan, on Ollie Watkins as well, who's been pushed out to a 4-1 chance now to be on the plane to Qatar. Clearly, he's only got one goal this season, just four shots on target as well. It's been a disappointing start, I think, for Ollie Watkins. And Villa in general, of course.
Feel very sorry for Ollie Watkins leading the line for Aston Villa at the moment. It's not like he's missing loads of chances, because the chances are not coming at all. Tim, on Ivan Toney, do you not think that he is the kind of something different that we've been waiting for as England fans to back up Kane. Yeah, Tammy Abraham's a great goal scorer, but you feel like Ivan Toney's got a little bit more to his game. I guess these two games, if he appears, they'll go a long way to whether he does make it into the squad over Tammy.
Yeah, obviously the games will be important. We'll see how much game time he gets, and that'll be interesting. You know, George makes a really good point about probably not being able to experiment, especially the fact that there are no friendlies before the tournament, which is just adds to the level of farce of this whole thing, really. But I think in terms of Toney, it's an important week for him off the pitch as well as on, because we know how much emphasis Southgate places on the group dynamic and the character of a player. You know, Connor Cody being the prime example, doesn't really play, but he's almost guaranteed to go because he's such a good character around the place. I think in terms of who goes, you go on form. For me, you go purely on form, because on who's scoring more goals, who's playing more confidence, because the chances are that Toney or Abraham will only be an impact substitute. And I guess the one benefit, probably the only benefit of having a World Cup now instead of at the end of the season, is fatigue won't be as much of an issue after a long, grueling season. So I think you just take your hot striker, basically, as your backup, and Tammy Abraham is sort of out of sight, out of mind a little bit, but he's I think he scored two for Roma this season, so Toney would certainly be a favourite. We shouldn't discount Abraham, like I said, out of sight, out of mind, but Tony's got a lot to offer. I think he'll fit in, and I think he'll go.
Yeah, maybe worth noting as well, because Roma have a European campaign. Ivan Toney, you would expect, would be more fresh going into World Cup. That's quite an interesting perspective that you've put on it there, Tim. Tim, I'll stay with you, because you're talking about players in form. You know, Luke Shaw and Harry Maguire, they're both included in the squad, despite not really being first choice for Manchester United at the moment. You'd imagine they're both going to go to Qatar now. People are going to look at Gareth Southgate and state that he said, I will pick squads on form rather than reputation. Where do you stand on this?
I don't agree with that. I think you can't have one set policy for every single player. You've got to have a bit of wriggle room. I think Maguire will go, from what he's done in an England shirt in the last few years, and Southgate obviously trusts him. But sure, I mean, he hasn't played a minute of league football since that 4-0 defeat to Brentford. Malassi's got the shirt. Don't see him not having that in the kind of short to medium term before the World Cup. So there is an issue at left wing back or left back, because Shaw's not playing at all. Chilwell now has serious competition for his shirt at Chelsea with Cucurella, and even Raheem Sterling at left wing back. So there aren't many options, really. I think it's probably Trippier's place. I've been watching a lot of Ryan Sessegnon in recent weeks, and he's been doing really well, and he's in the 21s. I think it'll come too soon for him to get a call-up, but left wing back's definitely a bit of a weakness. If Shaw doesn't play another minute in the league before the World Cup, he can't go, simple as that. You know, he's not Gareth Bale. You know, he's not that important to the squad. He's got to be playing.
Any chance we see Arsenal right winger Bukayo Saka rolling back the years and being given a chance at left wing back? Because, you know, Tim's right that there's no one really who stands out who's playing regular first team football at a high level to justify their place in the team, and you know, Kieran Trippier can do a job there, but I think it is a shame to have a right footed player playing on the as left wing back, because it makes you pretty one dimensional in the way that you can play out from that side. Just on what you said there about Southgate and that quote that is regularly brought up about him saying that he would choose players on form rather than reputation. And I'm not blameless in this, because I brought it up a fair bit when I was fronting the Jack Grealish for England campaign. But it's I think when you're a new manager and you are talking about the vision that you set out for the way you're going to select your squads, that's very different to being a manager who's overseen two major tournaments. And in Harry Maguire and Luke Shaw, you've got a centre-back who has been a massive presence in two successful major tournaments, who scored some very crucial goals in that time as well, and a left back who was arguably England's best, or one of England's best players in the Euros. And last time we saw him playing in a major tournament for England, he scored a goal at Wembley in a final. So it's not as simple now for Gareth Southgate to turn around and wed himself so aggressively to what he said 6 years ago or 5 years ago. He has relationships with these players. He has a playing relationship and a personal relationship with them as well. And it's not just as simple as throwing that out of the window in favour of, you know, whoever's the best left back currently playing minutes at left back in the Premier League, because Tyrell Malacia has the shirt ahead of Shaw at the moment, shouldn't necessitate that he doesn't get his chance to stake his claim for the squad in Qatar.
I will say, I hope Football Cliché has come after you. Talking about Saka rolling back the year. Can't roll back the
rolling
year.
Rolling back a year.
You cannot do that. I'm not having that. Yeah, hopefully they'll come after you. Steve, my issue with the Maguire and Shaw debate is I actually have no issue with Shaw being in there, because he doesn't scare me when I watch him. Harry Maguire is so far off form when he is on the pitch. That's the bit I kind of have a problem with. If Maguire just wasn't playing for Manchester United, but when he was on the pitch, he looked moderately assured and he just lost his place because there was a preference for two other centre-backs, I think I'd be okay with it. My problem is that since the Euros, his confidence has fallen to its lowest ebb, and his performances are nowhere near the level we know he's capable of.
I think confidence is a massive word there, and you look at where he is now playing for Manchester United. Clearly, he's not in the front two of the two centre halves, which will be a massive worry for him. I think Lindelof might even be in front of him as well. So he's gone from such a high, everyone loving him when England were absolutely flying, and now he's on the low. His confidence is completely on the floor. So again, as a football fan, you'd love to see him full of confidence and putting on a strip and playing regularly again. But at the moment, Dan, it just seems an absolute mile off he's going to be anywhere near. However, from an odds point of view, I think we still do think that Harry Maguire will be in the squad. But I think we're extremely short, like the two guys have touched upon with Luke Shaw. I think 8 to 15, Luke Shaw is at an absolute ridiculous price and needs lengthening pretty sharpish.
I mean, if the defence was worrying us, let's cheer ourselves up by talking about central midfield, Tim. Calvin Phillips is missing with a shoulder injury. It looks like Jude Bellingham now has a huge chance to stake his claim ahead of the World Cup in Qatar. We'd think it would be Bellingham and Rice on Friday. Henderson's been recalled back to the squad as well to replace Phillips. It felt like a weird omission in itself, but then I think Henderson was seen as being fitter than England thought he was going to be. Central midfield is a little bit light as well.
Yeah, it is. And I'd predict Bellingham will play well, and he might be the clamour, really. There's always a clamour. It was Grealish last time. I think it'd be Bellingham this time, the clamour to get in the team, particularly because it looks like there's an open spot there. But again, knowing Southgate as we do over a few years now, I can't see anyone other than Henderson playing in the World Cup if he's fit. I guess you've got to remember with Southgate, he's a pragmatist and he won't be swayed by public opinion, and he'll want those. You know, we talk about the weakness in the defence, the lack of options, and it's probably England's weakest area, even when everyone's fit, to be honest, at centre half. So he'll want that extra protection in midfield. But also, there's nothing wrong with that, because most tournaments aren't won by the most exciting, open attacking teams. You know, they're won by the teams that are hardest to beat, and Southgate's got a very good record in tournament football with a semi-final and a final. So, I'd love to see Bellingham in there and England to take the handbrake off a bit, but I'd be surprised if Southgate does that for that first game against Iran.
Yeah, talking of Bellingham, there is going to be an episode on this feed from Wednesday looking at the race for Bellingham next summer. There's also a great article that goes through all that as well with various contributors from The Athletic, so do go and check that out if you haven't done so already. George, on Bellingham, one of the things I've heard levelled at him is that he wouldn't have the experience to come and sit, or the discipline to come and play in a midfield two in front of the back three. I disagree with that. I think his game intelligence is up there with almost anyone. I also think you can't really level experience at him. He's played so many games over the last few years at a really high level. I think Bellingham's capable of playing in a midfield two next to Rice, and I actually think that's a really, really strong midfield two in front of a back three.
We've seen him play in a midfield two in front of a four for Dortmund plenty of times this season. His versatility is one of his biggest strengths. He can play as a six, he can play as an eight, he could probably play as a 10 if he wanted to. He is so incredibly talented, and he's a guy who, yes, he's 19 years old, but he has played as a teenager for his boyhood club, starting week in, week out, as a 16, 17-year-old, and he's now playing regular Bundesliga and Champions League football and performing at an incredibly high level. The perception that Jordan Henderson is a safer pair of hands when you've got one guy, and I'm a big Henderson fan, but there's no denying that his career trajectory is now probably on the decline. And if you're looking for somebody to come in and do the job that Calvin Phillips does, I would argue that the legs that Bellingham has compared to Henderson would make him more fitting for that role, even though he's obviously not the same kind of destroyer. But in fairness to Southgate, and I completely agree with what Tim's saying about him being a pragmatist, but I would go as far as saying that the most interesting decision making that we've seen from Southgate in tournament football was him going into a Euros with Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips as a centre midfield pairing, not because either are particularly expansive, but purely because, you know, they're a West Ham and Leeds centre midfield duo. Phillips had very little international experience before the qualifying campaign. When there were older, like Henderson, options available to him, you know, he was happy to go for two younger guys who in their careers are probably more akin to Bellingham than Henderson is. So I would hope that Bellingham, and I'm sure he will, because he is good enough and because he is so good, to be frank, will go forwards and prove himself over these couple of games, and will hopefully make himself undroppable, because that's what Calvin Phillips did before the Euros, and Southgate was willing to invest his trust in him.
So Steve, Jordan Pickford's going to be missing. Let's look at the goalkeepers now. It's Aaron Ramsdale, Nick Pope and Dean Henderson fighting it out for two squad spots. Who gets them and who starts in Qatar?
Yeah, well, personally speaking, I think if Jordan Pickford is fit, then he starts. We're 8-13 about Pickford starting, and I think that should be shorter than that. I think Pickford has been the best goalkeeper in the Premier League so far this season. So for me, that feels like it should be a 1-3 chance. And then Aaron Ramsdale is quite a clear second favourite at 2-1 with Nick Pope at 8-1. So I think Ramsdale had a bit of a torrid time at Molineux. I think he faced five shots on target and conceded four goals against Hungary. I seem to see a few people talking up Nick Pope, who's had a brilliant second part of the season at Burnley, despite the relegation, has done really well at Newcastle. So we have seen some money for Nick Pope at 8. But Dean Henderson, I think he's conceded 14 in his last four games for Nottingham Forest. He's a 20-1 and a clear outsider, those. But it's Pickford's to lose for me, who's been brilliant so far this season.
Yeah, Tim, I always feel like we have issues with goalkeepers going into names, because I always feel like someone, one of the backups, pulls out with injuries. I feel like that's happened a few times over the last few tournaments. And, you know, Pickford's injury actually is a little bit of a concern.
Yeah, massively. I mean, you know, we talk about, yeah, picking on form or picking favourites, and yeah, he ticks every box at the moment. He's been outstanding, and there would be an issue if he was injured. Interesting to see who gets the third spot. If Ramsdale's second, it probably would be Pope. I think, again, a look at personality, you know, your third choice keeper is not very unlikely to play, so you kind of want someone who's not going to rock the boat, who's going to be a fun personality around the camp. And that'll be a bit of an issue in terms of picking his whole squad, actually, because there's 26 players. You'd imagine he'll take 26. I mean, you'd be a bit of a fool not to. So there's going to be quite a few players who just won't be featuring at all. We know what an emphasis he places on character. There are some high-profile players. Someone like James Maddison hasn't been in the squad at all and doesn't look like he's going to get a shout again, perhaps for those reasons. So it's going to be an interesting squad announcement when it comes, but I think you can probably pick sort of 20 to 23 of those right now.
Could almost do with a Connor Cody type as a third choice goalkeeper. Someone good around the place. Scott Carson. Not playing. You could. Scott Carson. I mean, he's a great number three, George. One of the best. Great knowledge there.
Dave Besson. Get Dave Besson back.
Yeah, let's see what we can do about that. Let's start a Scott Carson for England campaign. Let's move away from Scott Carson for England and look at Wales then. They play Belgium on Thursday evening and Poland on Sunday. They're two games that are going to be critical for Rob Page in assessing where his side are before the World Cup. Tim, Rob Page has recently been given a new four-year deal. Do you see him being able to build on a decent Euro 2020 campaign? How far do you think they can realistically go? And I feel weird saying that, because obviously we know they can go far in tournaments because they've done it recently.
Yeah, and the draw's been really kind to them, I think. Obviously, England are massive favourites for Group B, but you'd imagine it's probably between Wales and America for that second spot. I'd give Wales a decent chance of beating the US. But then looking further ahead, you know, you mentioned they can go, they have the potential to go far in the tournament, or at least go some step of the way. The second round, and we all do it when we look at our wall charts and see, you know, the route to the final, the route to the semis, or the route to the quarters. Well, Wales and England will face whoever's first and second in Group A, which is the Netherlands, Ecuador, Senegal, and Qatar. So I don't think there's anything to fear at all in that group. You know, the Netherlands are clearly the best team in there, but still not really one to fear. So the draw's been kind to Wales. Obviously, their target will just be to get out of the group, I'd imagine. But you never know. There are quite a few variables in that squad. Even their star players, Ramsey and Bale, not really starting much for their clubs, although they are playing. So Ramsey's out in France, most people will know, playing for Nice with a crazy squad of ex-Premier League players. It is bonkers. Ross Barkley, Kasper Schmeichel, Joe Bryan is in there, Mario Lemina, Morgan Schneiderlin, Nicola Pepe as well from Arsenal.
Hey Tim, I'm going next week to watch Nice against PSG.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so nice. I'm going, that's one. Yeah, very nice. I'm extremely looking forward to that. And yes, Dan, it is corporate.
I thought it might be corporate. That's such an eclectic bunch of players. And then you throw Steve Freeth in there as well. Absolute madness.
I was just going to say, Ramsey is playing, which more than he was, you know, for Rangers towards the second half of last season. It's eight appearances and four starts so far. Bale in LA, it's 11 matches but only two starts. So he's sort of ticking over, really. You know what you're going to get with Wales? They're going to set up defence with a lot of players in defensive positions, and then rely on Bale, Ramsey, plus Brennan Johnson, who may or may not start, Dan James, Kiefer Moore option. But then Dan James hasn't started a game for Fulham yet either.
No.
Danny Ward's form is a concern, obviously, for Leicester. So there are quite a few variables. However, you know, I think we've said this with Wales a lot in the past, but they always seem to turn up at a tournament. They're hard to beat, and they've got that sort of X factor in certain places up front. So I think they'll spring a surprise for most people. But when you actually look at it, it won't be much of a surprise if they get out of the group.
George, will this be Bale's last hurrah?
It's impossible to say, isn't it? I mean, it feels like it. It feels like if it was up to Gareth Bale, he would retire from football and just play for Wales every 2 years. But I'm not sure that's particularly likely. I think it probably also partly depends on what happens at the tournament. I can see if they don't really show up and Bale fails to have an impact, that would probably inspire him to try and give it another campaign and try and get to the Euros in a couple of years' time. So who knows? I feel like we've spoken about the end for Gareth Bale at Wales. We've spoken about the end of Cristiano Ronaldo, who's speaking this week about wanting to play on. We've spoken about the end for Lionel Messi so often that it seems to be a fool's game predicting when these legends are gonna move aside. But I think probably more likely if Bale does manage to have a moment or Wales manage to have a good run, then it could be his last showing.
And finally, Steve, what are the latest odds for England to go all the way in Qatar? And what are the, you know, is there any other talking points from the odds England was?
Yeah, there's plenty, Dan. They are. You might be surprised to know they are second favourites to win it at 11-2 behind Brazil at 9-2. Very short price to win the group at 1-3. They're actually 10-1. Not to qualify, and Tim was right, it is quite close between the USA and Wales to get out of the group. Wales are 11-10 to qualify, with England 100-1 to get 0 points and just 9-4 to get all nine. So there is plenty of confidence behind England, which does surprise me a little bit. Harry Kane is also the favourite to be the top goal scorer at 7-1, in front of Mbappe at 9 and Messi at 16. So plenty of faith in Harry Kane and England by the looks of it.
Who do you think is going to win the World Cup, Steve? Who's the Steve Freeth pick?
Argentina, 7-1.
Argentina? Same as me, I was going to go for Argentina. George?
I think Brazil are the right favourites, personally. I mean, their strength and depth is pretty staggering. But, and this is a pure price thing, Dan, before I start getting you texting me, telling me that I'm wrong and all this other stuff, as if I'm saying they're going to win. I think if I was to have a bet, I think the European contingent are way too short compared to two others who have proven themselves to be, should be in amongst them. I think Denmark and Croatia are both 28-1 and 50-1. When you consider that Croatia, let's start with Denmark, who were so impressive in the Euros, who got knocked out in extra time by England, who are second favourites to win the whole thing. They've got Christian Eriksen back. They've still got Hulman as manager, who's so impressive. And we've seen them in recent games. They beat France in France 2-1 in the Nations League, done the double over Austria. And then the one team that's beaten them is Croatia, who also come into it really good form. Croatia 50-1. Their last two games going to Denmark and to France and beating them both 1-0. So, we know that it's an ageing side maybe, but with Kovacic, Modric, Brozovic, you know, there's still a lot of quality players in there as well. So from a pure price point of view, if I was to have a bet, I'd be looking to back a couple of outsiders each way in Denmark and Croatia. But yeah, Brazil probably the right favourites to win the whole thing.
You go on about getting texts and stuff, but you don't answer the question. Who do you think is going to win the World Cup, George?
Brazil.
Brazil, thank you very much. And Tim, finally, your call.
I mean, it's not going to be Denmark.
or Croatia.
Clip that up, producer Dave, please, and send it over to me as a voice note.
That's up there with his Everton won the window one from a few weeks ago. I did like that one.
It's looking right, that, isn't it?
I don't know about that.
To be
that.
Fair, yeah, there's been worse shouts.
I would say France or Brazil for me, although France won it last time. Unlikely to be sort of double winners, you'd say. Not sure that's ever happened before. France or Brazil, let's say Brazil.
Yeah, there is a piece on the current landscape with France at the moment. As always, a lot going on with Le Bleu. So that's it for our international segment. When we come back after the break, we're going to take a look at the Premier League.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
So the international break is a good opportunity for us to take the temperature of the Premier League and have an eye on how we think the rest of the season may pan out from here. Steve, seven games in, Arsenal are top. How are the title odds looking?
Yeah, Manchester City are still clear favourites, Dan, and have shortened from 8 to 13 in pre-season to 1 to 3 now. Incidentally, Haaland, who was 20 to 1 to score 35 or more in the summer, is actually just 3 to 1 to do that now and break a Premier League record. That was at 42 games. Liverpool have been the big drifters. 9-4 pre-season, out to 7-1. Arsenal, the big movers, 66-1 into 10-1. We'll lose a few million quid if Arsenal should win, although I'm not too worried just yet. Spurs, as you were really, nothing's changed for Spurs. Still remain at 14-1. Manchester United were 100-1 after losing their first two games. They're currently 33s, the same price as Chelsea, whose price have doubled since the start of the season. So I don't know about you guys, but it feels like none of the big teams have really played each other yet, barring Arsenal against Man United. I don't recall many other big games against the two. Two sides going up in like real blockbusters, but I'm sure we certainly got some after the international break.
Yeah, Chelsea Spurs was a good game, yeah, early on in the season, but Chelsea feel like they're quite far away from challenging for the title at the moment. Tim, as the London man nowadays, I imagine you've seen them all play at some point through the season. Of the London teams, who is closest to challenging City?
I don't think either of them will challenge City. The interesting thing about Spurs for me, having watched their last few games, is that they're not actually playing that well. So they won 6-2 the other day, but it wasn't a 6-2 by any means. I mean, Leicester just completely folded. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, really, that they haven't hit top form yet. I mean, Son, apart from that 30-minute hat-trick, he hadn't scored before then, so he hasn't been on top form. Kane's been scoring, but not been at his Kane-level best. Kulusevski was in and out of the team. Issues in a couple of areas of the pitch. So when they start playing well, which you'd imagine they will at some point, they'll be a bit of a force to be reckoned with, and they've got one of the best managers in world football who knows how to win a league title just as much as pretty much anybody. So I would say Spurs are better placed in the long haul, but obviously Arsenal are pretty scintillating at the moment. And, I remember we spoke a few weeks ago about the weaknesses in their team, and Granit Xhaka being one of them. Well, that's certainly not the case at the moment. He's one of the form players in the league. Some really good stuff on The Athletic about him this week. So I feel like there's a bit of a charge from North London, and both teams will be sort of in the top four at the end of the season, but I don't see either of them challenging Man City.
So George, let's pretend I've just asked you who's going to win the Premier League this season. Let's talk about the teams beneath them. If you had to choose one to come second, who would it be?
I think at this stage, probably Arsenal. I'm surprised to see the price discrepancy between Liverpool and Arsenal in the betting. I think a few Arsenal fans who've been tweeting me this week, telling me to drop my agenda, probably just drop their coffees hearing me say that. But I think on what we've seen so far, there are too many doubts about Liverpool at the moment. It feels to me like we're seeing a changing of the guard when it comes to their midfield. I think it's happening a bit early. I'm not entirely sure having both Fabio Carvalho and Harvey Elliott playing is necessarily great. When Thiago plays, they're a different side, but his fitness issues are quite clear to see. And James Milner, in my opinion, should not be anywhere near the pitch for a top four Premier League side, and Jordan Henderson's kind of moving in that direction. So, it's important, I always think, at this stage of the season to remember that things change and narratives change and performance levels change. And, I think giving Manchester City the title at this stage is premature, especially when you, as Steve says, when you recognise the fact that they haven't really played anyone who we'd expect to take points off them yet. And Liverpool's, Liverpool could well still turn it around and become the challengers. But on what we've seen so far, and I think it's important not to place too much emphasis on one game, but Arsenal's performance at Brentford, no matter what Thomas Frank says, it's one of the weirdest post-match interviews thing I've ever seen, was their best performance of the season by miles. It was so impressive in terms of what they did going forward. The fact that once they went ahead, they kept their foot on the gas. They didn't drop off at all. They didn't stop their pressing. They didn't stop attacking where possible. And that was their best form of defence. You know, Brentford created basically nothing. Damsgaard had an okay chance that was smothered by Ramsdale, and that was it. That was a complete performance where not only were they threatening throughout the game, but they also were able to maintain that. You know, it's the way that City defend. You just continue to attack. You don't let the opposition come near your final third. And Thomas Frank saying that was a performance where normally they would come away with a win or a draw. I don't think that's the case, but that's praising Arsenal because they couldn't really get near them. So yeah, I think Arsenal looked to me to be the most likely, but there's still a hell of a long way to go and many, many more twists and turns where we're going to learn more about these teams in the coming months. And it wouldn't surprise me at all either if Chelsea under Potter or even United under Ten Hag could muscle their way into the top four as well.
Yeah, just on Liverpool, Steve, do you think there's any danger of them having a season like they did a couple of seasons ago, the season Van Dijk picked up that bad injury and they really had a difficult time and they managed to get into the top four in the end, but it was a real hard season for them? There is a few similarities in the way that they're playing at the moment and kind of the way they're getting caught out at the back as well. But Van Dijk's there this time.
He is, but I think he would recognise that he's not in the kind of form that we've seen over recent years. Likewise, have they been... I mean, the front three over the years at Anfield has been absolutely incredible, hasn't it? And of course, Mo Salah's not been as potent as he has been previously from a goals point of view. I think he might have had a few assists this season, but there's also a changing... We talked about the changing of the guard in midfield. There's also a changing of guard in the front three as well, so that would be a little bit of a concern, really. So, and that Naples performance was an absolute shocker, and we seem to be having a few uncharacteristic poor performances from Liverpool. That would be a concern for me. They are 11-4 not to finish in the top four, so they are 1-4 to do that, but... Personally, I'm quite happy to take on Liverpool in the current state of affairs.
Yeah, and after the top six that we've discussed, Brighton and Newcastle are seen as the next challengers, both 14-1 for top four and 10-3 and 7-2 respectively, for the top six. Of course, Roberto De Zerbi has been appointed as Brighton manager. Should we expect a drop-off from that appointment, Tim?
It's pretty hard to tell with him and also with Graham Potter at Chelsea in terms of impact for this season. Certainly someone like Potter, you know, does he have to finish in the top four this season? Does he have to win a trophy? Is he allowed to be in build for the long term, etc.? Brighton will be the same. It's going to be a massive change. I know that they'll be looking for someone similar, obviously, in terms of style, which we expect not to change too much at Brighton, but there's so much to get used to from a new manager. It's pretty impossible to predict. One thing in his favour and also in favour of Newcastle and a few other teams is that they're not playing in Europe. And I think, you know, we talk about the unpredictability of this league after the World Cup, with players coming back potentially injured or certainly fatigued or mentally fatigued or out of form or whatever. But even just next month, teams in Europe are pretty much all playing 9 matches in October. So Spurs have got 9 games in 29 days. Man United have got something similar. I haven't looked through everyone's fixtures, but I'd imagine it's the same story. Obviously, everyone had one game postponed recently. Some, like Man United, had 2 games postponed. So if you're not in Europe, I think it'd be more beneficial than potentially ever before, really, to have weeks in between games rather than travelling all over Europe for Champions League and Europa League games.
Yeah, and I can't claim to know much about De Zerbi myself, but luckily here at The Athletic, there's always someone knocking around that does know something about people that you don't know anything about. Let's hear what James Horncastle said speaking to The Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
And so they talk about calcio italiano, Italian football, and they talk about calcio europeo, European football, as though Italy is not part of Europe, as though Italy is separate. And but De Zerbi's kind of football in Italy, I would say, is considered calcio europeo. It's more in keeping, more in step with what you see in Germany, Spain and England. It's what Italian teams should play in order to be competitive in the Champions League, the Europa League and the Conference League.
Thanks very much to James. Let's look now at the relegation odds. Steve, can we have an update from the pre-season prices? Bournemouth, Forest and Leicester look the likeliest to go down. Do we agree with that?
Yeah, of course, Bournemouth and Forest were favourites at the start of the season. But the big mover is Leicester City, who have been 20-1. At the start, and they are now 15-8. I know Tim saw them last week at Spurs. They just have a habit of scoring, you know, two in a game, but not being able to either keep a lead or get any points on the board. Clearly, set players have been a huge frustration for a long while for them. I think Maddison had a great game last week. You know, looking at the data there, he seems to be in decent form, but defensively they look to be a right mess at the moment. And so those are the big movers. Southampton have shortened slightly from the start of the season. and threes into 9-4, 11-4 Everton, kind of around there anyway. And am I allowed to mention Wolves at 3-1 as well, possibly in a little bit of trouble? No, I didn't think I could, Tim. No.
You're allowed to do that. I was thinking you might mention Villa at some point. We might be amongst it.
7-1, Dan, currently 10th favourites for relegation, but hopefully that will change.
Okay. George, of those teams that Steve just mentioned, is there anyone there that you particularly think should be nervously looking over their shoulder?
I think pretty much all of them, if I'm honest. I think Wolves at 3-1, there is quite a lot depending on Diego Costa being functional, I would say. I just really worry, and we said it in the pre-season show as well, despite the fact they're a great watch, they've got lots of talented players, I just worry about them having enough goals in them to get themselves away from trouble. It would be a surprise if they weren't down there come the end of the season. So not particularly positive about them. And then Saints as well do look to me to be a side who are threatened. But at the moment, what I will say is I think at the moment, Bournemouth, Forest and Leicester are miles off it compared to the rest. I think there's like a genuine gap between those three and everybody else that stands at the moment.
Sure, I agree with Bournemouth being miles off it. Gary O'Neill's done very well since he's come in, probably got a chance of getting the job full time. Wolves struggling to recover from the loss of two key figures, I guess, Tim, yourself and Connor Cody. Your face, as George was talking about,
I've always liked you.
In pain.
I think Wolves will be okay purely because they cannot afford to be relegated. And if they're in any danger in a few weeks' time, then they'll change their manager and Jorge Mendes will bring in one of his...
I love the way we just talk about Jorge Mendes like he's the owner of Wolves and he just casually dropped in and no one ever argues
with him. He's had a massive say in who the last two head coaches are, and I have no doubt that it'll be the same again for the next one. Bruno Lage is in a spot of bother at the moment because he's hung his hat on the fact that they've gone more attacking this season with 4-3-3, and they scored 3-7, so that they're actually more goal shy than they've ever been in the Premier League. And for a head coach brought in to make them more attacking and entertaining, and 15 months into the job, doesn't look great for him, albeit with a couple of injury worries. Just on Leicester, I would say it felt like to me Brendan Rodgers' sort of last chance saloon really at Spurs last week. Again, sorry to say, but having watched Spurs a little bit, the way you frustrate them, and Brendan Rodgers will know this, is you sit deep, you let them have the ball and you let them come onto you. Whereas Leicester went for the game by the throat, completely opened themselves up and ended up conceding 6 goals, and Rodgers just sounded like a beaten man at full time. It's quite sad to hear. Basically said it's up to the owners whether they let me go or not. Didn't even really make a case for himself. Michael Cox articulated it better than I ever could when he said Brendan Rodgers is a good manager, Leicester have got a really good squad, they'll both be fine without each other, but together at the moment it's just not working, and they're another club who can't afford to go down.
No, but they can't, but they unlike Wolves, they can't afford to do anything about it either. I mean, that seems to be the key issue.
Nah.
Like Villa, Wolves, Leicester cannot afford to go down. Villa and Wolves can open the, you know, loosen the purse strings in January if they want to. If Leicester could afford to sack Brendan Rodgers, he would not be their manager right now. They are trying to work out how.
I don't think he'd have been there at the start of the season, to be honest.
They figuratively can't afford to get relegated, but they also literally cannot afford to spend the money to stay up.
Yeah, we know managers very rarely walk away, so it kind of just feels like a marriage of convenience at the moment, or inconvenience, as the case may be. Tim, as the London man, as I keep saying, Fulham, we haven't even mentioned them as a potential team to go down, which tells you everything you need to know about their start. Absolutely stupendous from Marco Silva's men so far.
Yeah, brilliant. Looking at potentially, you know, a surprise mid-table, maybe even top 10 finish if they continue with the form they're in. If Mitrovic continues scoring, you know, they've got depth in the squad now. They can bring Willian and Dan James and Tom Kearney off the bench. They're looking really good. They're pretty fun to watch as well. So, he's doing a fantastic job.
Best summer signing as well, in my opinion, in João Paulinho. Absolutely love watching him play for Fulham. Steve Cooper, there's talk that his job might be under threat at Forest. Surely even in this bonkers world that we live in football-wise, surely not.
Oh, I don't know, Dan. It's
no manager's going to be able to just get that squad firing straight away. It just isn't going to happen.
Well, with the owner, I suppose you've got to look at your owners, and the owner's already pulled the plug on one manager this season, as in Carlos Corberan, I think, after a few games. So he's already got, admittedly, he had 22, 23 new players to gel together, and that will be his excuse. I think the first, you know, the 4 games that they've had conceding 14 goals, I think the 6 goals that they've conceded in the last 2 games will be a real worry for me. The fact that they conceded those goals against Fulham, 54, 57 and 60 minutes, it would be a huge concern. The 3 games that they've got next, Leicester, Villa and Wolves, clearly are huge games for the football club. And as a manager now, it's such a short shelf life. it was only 6 weeks ago that people were probably talking about Steve Cooper as probably stepping up to somewhere else, a bigger club than Forest, you know, like, you know, Chelsea manager or stuff like that. But he was in the betting for that. So it's a tough one, but I can understand why he's under pressure. Personally, I wouldn't pull the plug. I'd love to see a coach like Steve Cooper pull through and Forest to kick on and have a great season. But I think they're in for a bit of a struggle. And it feels like a bit of a Fulham from a few years ago when they went down.
More points or more players? That's the question with Forest at the moment. 22 signings, so are they going to earn more points than that?
Good market created there.
They will. Yeah, I think they'll be in for probably early 30s, I would say. But it's probably a fair market, Timmy. I'll get working on that as we speak.
That's a good one. That's a good idea for free there. You get ideas for free on this podcast. Tell you what, yeah. Midlands football is absolutely miserable at the moment. There is not a lot going well.
It's a good job the Albion are playing well. Dan.
Jeez, yeah, not much joy at all in that region. But that is it for today's show. Thanks to everyone. Thanks to the team for joining me, and thanks to everyone for listening as well. We hope you'll enjoy the international games, and we'll see you again for a Premier League preview next week.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.